our members are also involved in other committees. Now people, they choose the committees they like. But that is being sorted out. I'm sure in the next meeting we invite you. All the members are here. So don't take it that you're being snapped. We can't snap you. We can't invite and then snap you at the same time. But thank you very much for coming. We understand the pressures. I thought this morning you won't be able to come because when we woke up this morning, we heard that in Cape Town there's no public transport. Buses have got their own issues and the taxes. And we really don't envy your job as far as the taxi recap, broader, what we call a program is concerned. Because we don't know why taxis today decide to stay away. Tichi, the objective of this meeting, as you know, is we shall be dealing with the fourth quarterly report. We understand that I'm not sure whether to call it an understanding, but there are certain programs, obviously, where there's been underspending and overspending. We'd just like you to give us some perspective in terms of what is it that is happening and how it's being addressed. I know that last year, when we were still at the NCOP, for instance, we did talk about, amongst other things, the issue of the subsidies, which seem to continue to be a problem. But maybe you will assist us in terms of saying, is this issue being addressed now? Where are we as far as this issue is concerned? Tshwane Municipality seems to be having their own fair share of challenges. Are we going to have the 2010 World Soccer in Tshwane come June next year? Or are they joining the Santaco? Not Santaco. No, I'm sorry, Santaco. My apologies. But those people, the taxi industry, that is matching. So, but on a serious note, I think that the issue of Tshwane would really like to. Sorry. Would really like to hear what's happening on those matters, amongst others, because they're one of the items that seems to be having some challenges. Well, we do understand, DG, that from your side, with your big budget, sometimes some of the what you call understanding, you might see them as small, of course, in terms of the percentage of understanding. But if your budget is a big budget like yours, 1% and 2%, in terms of numbers, may mean a big number. Never mind in a percentage. It's within the acceptable norm of an underspending or an overspending. On that note, we have also received an apology from Treasury. Apparently, there are clashes of meetings. You know, we know that this parliament only started in May. Immediately in June, there was a break. So now there are all kinds of pressures here in parliament to ensure that work is being done. So please bear with us. And thank you very much. If I may give over to you, teacher.
Honorable Chairperson and honorable members of the committee, thank you very much for this opportunity for us to brief you on the expenditure of 2008-2009. Honorable Chairperson, I'm here with the DDG Financial Services in the department, Mr. Colin Fizolo to my right, and the Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Dan Pretorius, to my left. We would, in our presentation, Chairperson, be taking you through the details of the expenditure issues and dealing specifically with the issues of under and over expenditure with respect to the particular financial year 08-09. In the outline of the presentation, Chairperson would be dealing with specifically details on the adjusted budgets, a summary of expenditure per program, under expenditure for program by economic classification, the requested rollovers for that particular financial year to 2009-10, and then the summary of over and under expenditure and the reasons for under expenditure in detail. Chairperson, we think, firstly, the information we have contained in your letter would need us particularly to draw attention to at least a potential misinterpretation from either our side or your side in relation to the actual issues related to under expenditure, and we'll deal with that detail and what we see might be just issues of communication. One of the issues, Chairperson, that you already point out is the issues of bus subsidies that we know was a principal challenge for us last year. And I'm happy, Chair, that you also recall that we engaged extensively on this issue and the challenges that it presented and what it meant, in essence, in relation to our budget. Chair, basically your correspondence indicates an under-expenditure of $57.5 million. But we just think it's an issue of what it's calculated out of. So we'd like to maybe give you a different exposition of what those figures really are, so that we can come to agreement about how the 57.9 was arrived at. Basically, what we're indicating is that in respect to the entire budget of the year, we ended up with not an under expenditure but an over expenditure of $345.8 million, which is 1.4% of the total adjusted budget. We also indicate clearly that the current expenditure undercurrent in relation to that budget, the under expenditure was $37 million, which is 0.15% of the total adjusted budget, and then of the current expenditure only, which relates to compensation of employees plus goods and services, the under expenditure was $51.5 million, which is 0.21% of the adjusted budget. But we will come back, and that basically gives you the picture in relation to the actual scenario of under and over expenditure in relation to the department. Chair, we were able in that particular diagram by economic classification to break down those particular issues and indicate the relationship per economic classification of the final appropriation, the actual expenditure, and therefore the variance, i.e. over or under expenditure, by economic classification. And then that variance as a percentage of the total budget, which is that 1.41% that we relate to. And, Chair, as you'll see quite clearly from there, the issues relate to both current payments, but largely the biggest problem is the issue of the over expenditure on transfer payments. And we know that story. It's the whole bus story and how it actually contributed towards this. In the next slide, Chairperson, we even break down, whilst we've broken down by economic classification, we'll also then give you basically other indicators in relation to the adjusted appropriation, the shifting of funds, the environment that we performed in relation to those various areas of economic classification, the final appropriation, actual expenditure, and again, the same level of detail in the variance and over and under expenditure per item, and then the percentage variance. If I may just illustrate, Chair, the challenge, therefore, that we would really be discussing in greater detail are the areas of compensation of employees in relation to that 93.3% under expenditure, which is about 6% under expenditure. And if I may just refer to the amounts as well, it's the 13 million in the compensation of employees. It's the 38 million under goods and services. And then we would also like to spend some time with the 383, which relates to the transfer payment issues, which basically give us that over expenditure of 345 million in relation to the figures. Chair, if we take the adjusted budget for the financial year, we give you in that particular slide 6 the detail of funds that were rolled over from the previous year, at a total of 37 million, and we give you the specific items that relate to that, including the Arrive Alive campaign, women and gender audit project, alignment of transport sector charter with codes of good practice, oil pollution prevention, development of national airports development plan, guidelines and standards of monitoring integrated transport planning, and then the restructuring of the road accident fund. Those are areas specifically where funds were rolled over from the previous year. In addition to that, the adjusted budget also contained elements of unforeseen and unavoidable expenditure. We were allocated 1.035 for disaster management, which related, Chair, in the previous year to the floods in KwaZulu-Natal, where we had roads washed out and bridges washed out and old towns that were basically inaccessible as a result of that flood damage. And that amount was allocated for this purpose and upgrading of stormwater. In many areas in KwaZulu-Natal that came during that particular period. And then the allocation to road accident fund comes in two forms. The first is listed there under unforeseen and unavoidable, which relates to the road accident fund for the liquidity constraint, which is the 1.2 million. And then the other amount allocated to road accident fund is the 1.3 million, which is indicated as in relation to unforeseen economic and financial events. That's just the way Treasury allocates in relation to what they perceive to have been the core reason in relation to the accident road accident fund. And that one addressed specifically the shortfall in the road accident fund. Then, Chair, we had an allocation.
Yes.
The next item, Honourable Chairperson, relates to an allocation for compensation of employees of 46 million that was allocated to us in the adjusted budget, primarily to take care of salary increases that had been agreed upon in wage agreements in that particular financial year, and that amount of 46, and also, because that amount was allocated, was also allocated to PRASA in relation to their budget, which comes through ours. Then bus subsidy allocation of 154 million. Chair, the story of bus subsidies we'll tell later on in the presentation. But in the adjusted budget, the agreements that Treasury had arrived at was to allocate us fuel costs, which did not solve the problem of the over expenditure, but they acknowledged the requirement to pay fuel costs. And that 154 was basically to cover those fuel costs, where, in fact, as you know, the crisis on the bus subsidies that emerged last year, the other costs in the subsidy were not covered in the adjusted budget, which is why we ended up not being able to pay the companies towards the end of the year. But fuel was paid, and that's the fuel amount in the 154. And then, Chair, on the 165, we relate to an adjustment that is made available where in relation to e-natives, we pay, well, we provide services in relation to development and maintenance of the e-native system at provincial level. Then there are transaction fees that are collected at provincial level that come back to us, but in relation to that, they are given to us via the adjusted budget, and we're compensated for the cost that we incur in relation to that, and that's what that 165 is about. Okay, in the next slide, we also give you a sense of the same summary of the expenditure program, but this time we do it by program, so that you can see exactly where those issues are located. On the programs that are listed there, administration, transport policy, transport regulation and accident investigation, integrated planning and interfere coordination, transport logistics, public transport, and public entity oversight. But Chair, the important thing of that slide is it starts to tell you where the areas of variance are largest and which program is actually responsible for those particular areas. And you can see the variance, if you look at that 75.2% in the transport policy and economic regulation program, a variance of 10 million in the, again, that 75% indicates the expenditure of the percentage of final appropriation, which in fact is the largest under expenditure by definition. And then in transport logistics, again, the 10 million that is related there, which constitutes 68.8% of their budget spent, but the under expenditure has indicated there. So I would like to focus your minds on those problem areas, and that's why we're bringing them to your attention so that we can deal with the detail in relation to it. In this one, we show under expenditure per program and per economic classification. If you like, we've combined the other two, and we show you the program and in which area they actually under or overspend, as is indicated there. What is important, Chair, to note on this slide, for instance, is the goods and services area of the 38 million under expenditure, but we actually detail this in slide 11 and other slides, and we'll be able to talk to you about the reasons for that and why that occurred. And then in transfers and subsidies, we give clearly under program four the rollover request of 473 million that we have requested in relation to that particular program, and we're able to give you a full explanation as we proceed on the presentation for that. That information just presents the information in a different way. We're summarizing it again, and we're just showing you the trend around expenditure in relation to different categories. Compensation of employees, goods and services, the over expenditure that happens on transfers and subsidies, which is largely in Program 4, and then payment of capital assets in relation to that. The next slides, again, are the same information. We're just comparing and showing you what was budgeted and what was spent, and that's the relationship between the two bars, as we indicate there. Chair, in that particular slide, slide 11, we then deal with the request for rollover, and we show exactly what areas of rollovers were requested for and why, and what are the key drivers in relation to that. Firstly, if we just refer to the first amount of a rollover request of 210 million, which is all the under expenditure that's reflected on program four. Chairperson, that was an amount that was transferred to, that was an allocation to PRASA, the Passenger Rail Services Agency, Passenger Rail of South Africa, where they were not able to spend an amount allocated for station upgrading and signaling on time in relation to a 2010 program, and their ability to spend was basically as a result of late planning around some of these issues. But we've had intensive discussions with them, and we've attempted to correct the situation. The second, Chair, is a matter that you referred to. It relates to, on the same fund, the Public Transport and Infrastructure Systems Fund, the allocation to Tshwane that was stopped and had to be reallocated to other areas. And Chair, we had done an analysis and interrogated the issues in relation to Tshwane and found that there was consistent understanding on their part. And this is basically the first sanction we had to apply to take the money back and allow them allocations that were aligned with what their capacity indicated they could spend. Part of the dangers around this particular fund relate to the deadline that doesn't shift, and that deadline is 2010. So if we're having under expenditure in particular areas, we have enough flexibility and ability here to move money to those areas that are able to spend and move it away from those cities that can't. Chair, we would not suggest that Tshwane will not be able to host, we don't think, but in essence, we would like to think that this particular penalty has rang the alarm bells in the cities of Tshwane to the extent that we believe they'll take and they have taken appropriate action. It doesn't mean that this amount will be reallocated to them by any means, but it just means that they will downscale their plans for 2010 quite significantly. The area of under expenditure in Tshwane actually relates to the BRT system that's supposed to start in Mabopane and end up at in through town and end up in Lofta. The end result is going to be a combination of what we call a half BRT. Because of the delays in implementation, they are not going to implement a full BRT as we know it. They are going to end up with dedicated lanes with maybe half of the stations that were meant to build instead of the full total amount. They're going to downscale. But the important thing around traffic movements and what we're trying to resolve with BRT is that there is a dedicated lane that is available for public transport users in order to create efficiencies around movement. So that's what we're likely to see in Tshwane, not a fully implemented system because of the challenges, but, you know, we are amenable to miracles. If miracles can happen between now and then, we'd be glad to see. But we are not unhappy with this final solution that would be in place. Because, Chair, if I just give you an example, the distances, typical distances in a BRT system between stations is anything from 2 to 5 kilometers. Now, if you do a BRT from Mabopane because you are moving people directly to the stadium in Lofta, you probably can get away with having 3 stations instead of 8. Because this is a purpose-directed model, which means people will not be moving from Mabopane and stopping at Roslyn. When the BRT is done eventually, they'd like to stop at Roslyn. But for 2010, they really need to stop somewhere around Pretoria Station to pick up more people and proceed to the stadium. So in a sense, it almost doesn't affect the operations. And I think we're not uncomfortable about that. But penalizing them is an indication from our perspective that this is not good enough. And it's a penalty they pay for not performing. I think the challenges that Tshwane had was in relation to capacity around the project team responsible for public transport, which, Chair, I must be honest enough and say over the last 3 years, they didn't quite have a team together to do this work. And yet they wanted to, but there was no people, warm bodies, to carry this task through. I think we started seeing committed warm bodies about 12 months ago. So that's why it's starting to move. But it's too late in the process, because then it means even the money they're allocated now will basically help them to recover from this particular penalty that we've introduced in the system. So I just thought I'll spend some time on the Tshwane issue because the Chair had raised it. Chair, there's another amount there, which is a transfer payment of 13 million for SANRAL. And I think there we just really explain what is a, we'll come back to that in the details of the explanation. But that's just an error in payment, an underpayment that resulted as an error in calculation, which was not paid to SANRAL and should have been paid. Then we speak to the issues around the various other contributors to the under expenditure on goods and services, and we give you the detail of what the specific projects were, which were underspent. By and large, Chairperson, outside of most of the other issues, the delays were either as a result of inconclusive consultation process or implementation that was required at a later stage and had been budgeted for earlier, and issues that also include studies that were being conducted, which basically were not concluded because of consultation with stakeholders, as they are listed there in the various areas. But, Chair, I think the important thing to note in relation to that is what is contained in the final column, which gives you a sense of the under expenditure in those particular programs, and the second last column, which gives you the actual subtotal amounts as they relate, one at the top at 473 to the transfer payment, and then in relation to current expenditure at 37 million, which is broken down into all those small amounts that we've listed there and the explanations.
Sorry, you indicated that as far as turnaround strategies for operating license, I don't know if this is what I understand. I'm waiting now in my constituency for some people who have organized themselves, those people who assist with licenses, for people to get licenses, they've organized themselves. Because when they book, they come there, the date that they get, and people are being thrown around. If someone is, if we talk Gauteng, because you come from Gauteng, if somebody is in Brakpan, is given, must go and book a license in Vereeniging and or in Tshwane, all over. Is that meant to address those kind of things?
Honorable Chairperson, thank you. The quick answer to that, Chairperson, is no, it's not related to driver's or learner's licenses. This relates to an even more controversial issue of the operating license boards that are located at provincial level that issue operating licenses to taxis and buses. Now, in that particular area, we have a turnaround strategy that we developed. We took it to Cabinet in February 2009 for its implementation, but it's the process that happened in 2008 that meant, and its approval subsequently in 2009, only in February. That meant that we can't implement the turnaround strategy in operating license boards. Chairperson, the issues that relate to operating license boards are about efficiency, anti-corruption strategy, cleaning out those offices so that taxi operators and bus operators don't sit and wait for applications that are not processed, dealing with numerous cases of fraudulently produced operating licenses that we find in the system. It's basically to help us to deal with that issue so that taxi recap and the other public transport operating areas are actually done efficiently. So it relates largely, mostly to the taxi industry services that are provided for at provincial level. But we're supposed to sign agreements with the provinces so that they take on that responsibility and implement the turnaround strategy. We're trying a best practice model, Chairperson. You would know that Home Affairs has done exceptionally well around the turnaround. So we are in, it's our frontline service delivery services such as this and the other licenses that you refer to, which are basically driver's licenses and learner license environment. Chair, I may indicate that even in that area that you're referring to, which is not this one here, we have a best practice model that we're implementing, which is attempting to clean up those environments in line also with the kind of common strategy that we've adopted in the governance and administration cluster of government, of just cleaning up the service delivery areas and eliminating challenges. I'm happy to also indicate, Chair, we'll see vast improvements on the learner license environment, because one of the important programs that we have here, which we are under implementation, it won't be underspent on, but it's performing quite well, is computerized learner license programs, which are implemented in mobile units across the country in order to cut queues and ensure that people who want learner licenses don't have to go through the traditional DLTCs to go and queue up for learner license. Now you can go into a mobile unit and do a learner license. It takes half an hour and you get out and you have a learner license printed out and it's given to you. So that's going to improve significantly on queues. Then we can focus on the driver's licenses, because those actually require testing the learner licenses are now computerized and they're being rolled out throughout the country. That will help us at least eliminate that problem, and then we can focus our efforts on the driver's license side. On the next slide, again, Chair, we give the summary of over and under expenditure in the 2008-2009 financial year, and we deal with that specifically in the areas. In compensation of employees, 13.2 million, and we'll explain that. In goods and services, we list the various areas, but we start to break down exactly in which of the programs where those amounts occurred. And why they occurred, we'll be able to provide. And then in the transfer payments, the biggest problem here, the bus subsidy story, and then the passenger rail thing, which we referred to earlier around their inability to start their 2010 program early enough, the City of Tshwane program, and then the Sandal amount as well, as we've indicated. Chair, those then are the three areas. If you'll allow us, we'll just give you the detail. Compensation of employees. If we deal with the detail of compensation of employees, we show you what the original budget was, 196 million. We got that additional 46 million in October. Chair, firstly, let me say we didn't quite expect that money from Treasury. It came out of their generosity at adjusted budget when they thought that they had money, but also they had an obligation to deal with the wage increase story. But largely, it's an amount that we did not ask for. We were given, I think they did it across all the departments in order to deal with the increase. And that amount basically gives us a total of 242, which is totally allocated. Yet at the same time in the department, in relation to our own structures and our environments, et cetera, we had identified the need to shift to other areas which were facing shortfall, an amount of 46 million. And that is something that we had already embarked upon, which means in reality the final appropriation was then 195, the actual expenditure was 182, and the under expenditure was then the 13 that remained, partly because of that unexpected amount, but also because at that particular point we did not have a full establishment and we were able to shift savings from that area of compensation of employees to other areas. And be able to allocate that for other purposes. That's the detail around the same amount. But Chair, we then tell the story about vacancies and why we're able to have a 46 million to shift around. We had a problem of vacancies in the department only because, Chair, we had expanded the department, if you will recall, from 2006 where we had three branches. Prior to 2006. In 2006, we approved an organizational establishment that increased that to 9 branches. So there used to be 3 DDGs in transport. They are now 10. Yes. And that's a reflection, Chair, of just acknowledging the scale of the challenge of transport. But it's also reflective of the growth of the budget of transport. Chair, you'll know that over the same period, in 2005, our budget was 4 billion. In the last year, this year that we're speaking about, our budget was 24 billion. No, Chair, we are one of the lucky ones that do not know how to spell recession. But it's an indication, Chair, of the commitment of government to finance the critical programs of public transport, of rail investment, of airport development, and all of those other critical priorities. And I think that growth in the organizational establishment is reflective. You can't manage a budget of 24 billion with the same 3 DDGs. It wouldn't work. You will not be able to perform. We'd be sitting before you showing you growth under expenditure because of that. So that relationship between the funded post originally and the growth of the department landed us in a place where prior to 2008, even before, we had high vacancy rates because we had expanded the staffing. So with very many new posts. And then we had to work on reducing those posts, working hard to employ people, to reduce, not vacancies because they existed, but fill new posts that had been recently approved in 2006. We came down, and as you can see there, by June 2008, we're 30% of vacancies of the total amount of the department, but largely it's the new posts that create that 30%. In December 2008, we're 23%. In April, we'd moved down to 9%. And in June, we're at 6.3%. We think we have successfully dealt with the issue of vacancies in the department. But Chair, you'll also note that in that 2008 year is the same year when we had that 46 million extra that were given by Treasury, which we did not expect, and therefore you can see why we ended up with more money in that budget than we should have, because the vacancy rate was at that level. But by beginning of this financial year, we've gone down to 6.3%, which means the problem of vacancies is no longer with us. We will just maintain vacancy rates that are normal, given turnover rates that happen in government in relation to people moving to better posts, and we're not unhappy about that particular situation. If we can move on, we've also placed a moratorium on the ceiling of vacancies currently, Chair, because of the challenge around the budgeted amount, which we might exceed if we exceeded with posts in relation to the funding amount. Proceed. Here, Chair, I won't go through that. We just give you what we managed to do to reduce our vacancies, because we had to have a concerted effort around that. Headhunting, retention strategy, appointment of second candidates, of common vacancy advertisements, and then focusing on meeting our quotas on the disability sector and promoting that very actively in order to fill vacancies in the department. Can you move on? And that all of that indicates what we're able to. The one important incentive, though, Chair, that we introduced, which I must refer to, is to link vacancies to performance of DDGs, so that if you have a high vacancy rate in your performance assessment, that is counted against you in the area of people management and empowerment. Nice incentive. You see vacancies fill very quickly. Because they know at the end, when you get to performance assessment, you don't ask questions, you just say, what's your rate? And therefore they get a mark as relating to that.
It's very
that you know what you're going to get in that area, and it's actually quite a nice incentive. But it also is about placing the responsibility at that level so that people are able to directly link their performance to the issue of filling posts. If we move on, Chair, under goods and services, we then highlight in exactly the same way the challenge in relation to the areas of under expenditure. We relate them also to the programs so that you can see on program one, program two, how the money shifted. The money shifted from program one to assist the challenges in program three, and we'll be able to give you the detail around that. But we also note that in program four, they overspent on goods and services, and that basically relates to the areas of public transport largely. As you can imagine, Chair, in those areas there's quite extensive new work that needs to be done, which requires assistance from consultants and a whole range of other services in order to be able to implement. But we're able to compensate for that because of savings that were accrued in other areas, and therefore we're able to shift. In Program 5, we relate specifically to the delays in the finalization of some of those strategies, which then results in an under-expenditure. That is partially related to capacity challenges in that specific branch, but also it directly relates to a challenge around consultation with important stakeholders in order to agree on those programs. I think we've come to a point at which developing some of these critical strategies is not simply about the department sitting and drafting a program and saying it gets approved. There's quite compared to many years ago, there's quite a very active stakeholdership out there that wants to be engaged specifically in detail around matters that affect them, which is a good thing, Chair. But by definition, it means that we now take longer to be able to deliver programs. For instance, the development of an air freight strategy, you would not do without Satao consultation. Principally, because it is their workers that get affected, you would have to engage them extensively on what you are proposing, and et cetera, et cetera. So the process around strategy formulation and policy formulation is one that engages much more. The branch line strategy, Chair, is another example, but there I must point out the difficulties around there with difficulties we had with Transnet in order to resolve very many issues with Transnet in order to conclude a branch line strategy. Chair, you'll recall that the branch lines originally belonged to Transnet. We needed them transferred to ourselves so that we could indeed develop the strategy. But in order to develop the strategy, we needed access to information. We have access to the asset base, the asset register. How many are they? Where are they located? How many railway lines? Where? And that took, just accessing that information was a particular challenge, as I think is commonly known. But we hope that that relationship is a better one now, and we're starting to see signs. In fact, we had a meeting with the Transnet recently, which indicated a very good approach we now have, which would mean collaboration and moving forward around doing the branch line together now rather than separately. So we're going to see progress in that particular area very soon. The other area... Yes, no, absolutely, Chair. Because when you sort out branch lines, we are able to enforce something we have at the back of our pocket, which is called axle weight limitation, which would mean that we limit the weight of the trucks that are on the road. But we can't limit them when we don't have the capacity on rail, because where do we expect them to go? So in a sense, I think immediately we resolve that problem, we can then enforce through that particular instrument and reduce the number of trucks that we see on our roads and have effective law enforcement that helps us to enforce that much more. But you've got to create the capacity, otherwise you're just creating log jams in the economic process, and it doesn't help the country and the economy in the end. The next one, Chair, relates to late appointment of a service provider for 2010 intercity bus fleet. We were managing that program in our consultations with National Treasury late last year. We started indicating the need to shift that function to PRASA in order for them to manage that program. And then we had challenges just around the institutional arrangement and insufficient funds to fund all of the requirements. The job became bigger. We had little money. The Treasury had stipulated a different arrangement, and we all had to transfer the function to PRASA in order for PRASA to carry it out. The end result is what we had there we couldn't expand, because it was not even sufficient to cover the particular issue that it was meant to deal with. The next one deals with the issue of the bus contract model and the issue of turnaround that you've already referred to, Chairperson, and that's a total amount of 4.2. In that next one, in Program 7, we have an area which came as a result of late claims from service of providers for the Road Accident Fund amendment. The issue there, Chair, is because of the way we work, we had an arrangement for Justice to pay them on our behalf, because we actually pulled them from the Department of Justice. So Justice paid them, but Justice has still not even claimed from us. So the money has been expended, but by a different department. We need to just compensate them and pay Justice so that we don't owe them.
PG, may I just disturb you? You know, the details of what you're giving us are very important. However, we have a problem against time. Can I give you now 10 minutes?
No, sir, I'm almost done.
Okay.
Yes, what will help me get to the end of this very quickly is that I recall quite clearly that we had a presentation to yourselves around the bus subsidy issue. So I will not go through that presentation. But it's attached and contained for information, because when we come here and explain that 345 over expenditure, we must provide you with the information as to how it happened. But I know that we've had this discussion before, so I won't go to that. We'll just conclude the presentation now, specifically with dealing with the areas around transfer payments, and that will be the end of the presentation. The bus subsidy story is here. If you want us to deal with it, we can, but because I am aware that we have dealt with it previously, we will just attach it and make it available for your information. So, Chair, then the next category is transfer payments, and those are the three areas. Some of them have already explained.
I understand you well. Are you saying, is there a way forward here on
which issue, Chair?
On the
bus subsidy. Okay. Chairperson, on the bus subsidy story, we've resolved the problem. It appears as an over expenditure on our budget, but the money we receive from National Treasury to help us to pay for that, and the reason it appears as an over expenditure, because it was not originally budgeted for, and that's why it appears as an over expenditure on our budget. If National Treasury had opted, Chair, you were aware of the court cases, to pay the bus companies directly, it wouldn't even appear here. But because they paid it through us, we end up with an over expenditure because it was not on our budget in the beginning. And that's how it's then reflected as an over expenditure. But we think the problem has been solved. We've put together a new grant so that rather than managing the interim contract as we did before, we now provide grants to provinces, which they then need to speak to. Yes, and the details of which have been finalized. Yes. So the last one then, Chair, is this one on the transfer payments. I've already explained the issue around BRASA and their particular late start on 2010, which resulted in 2010. I've already spoken at length about Tshwane, and those are the details we give you there around Tshwane, and the 250 that we'll be taking away from them. And then the transfer to SANRAL, which I indicated was just an administrative error in an underpayment to SANRAL that we're meant to provide them. And Chair, that gives you the reason why we're not able to make payments to BRASA, because of the absence of finalizing those arrangements. And we were, in fact, implementing what the law requires us to, and quite clearly not being able to condone the non-compliance by BRASA, which resulted in that. Because if we had, we would have been allowing them to be non-compliant in relation to that 210 million that's indicated. Then, Chair, there's the bus subsidy story, and that 856 million. We also have a little bit of an over expenditure around the taxi, in the taxi recap program. And that's just basically an adjustment issue because in the previous year, we had underspent because we tried to stop, I'm sure, Chair, in our last discussion, you remember we're saying we're trying to slow them down in the scrapping because there wasn't enough money on the budget. So we slowed them down and we missed the mark. We had an under expenditure of 7 million. In the next year, because of that under expenditure, we also kept them moving. But you can't always just get it right. You can't be precise around scrap X number and don't go over and under. That's the reason for that one. Then we had a small amount, which was an under expenditure on port regulator. And that's because they were using our account at the time. They had not established their own bank account because they are a newly established entity, and then the other amounts are really small. Chair, that would bring us to the end of the presentation. As I said, the balance of the presentation after that speaks to the bus subsidy issue. We just brought it in case the committee wanted a full discussion on that, but we are aware that the committee is aware of those details. We can deal with it at the pleasure of the Honourable Chairperson of the committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you, PG. So you're done. There's no addition.
Chair, no. We are going to be guided by you in terms of how we move forward. Thank you.
Now, thank you, PG, very much. You know, your presentations are always comprehensive, you know, and educative. In that for those of us who are not serving in the transport, they really make us aware of what's happening in the transport department. There's two of us here, my colleague, Comrade Mashiko. I think you have well presented your story, Chief. But my comrade is there, so she will always have some questions of clarity.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, DG. I'm just getting confused when we come to this issue of goods and services. At which level does our department regard an item qualifying for a good not be? Because we sometimes refer, we get this problem when we see an item that we say is over 3,000. It qualifies, doesn't qualify for simple things as goods and services. I just want to understand this goods and service from your department, because what where actually we are goods and services. Maybe I'm just taking a long line. What, when you refer to goods and services, so that we must understand this old understanding, the way you overspend or underspend on goods and services. Because what were actually, if we could just unpack what were this, just a little sentence or two.
On you want to clarify the current
Yeah, this slide of goods and services, that's slide number 19. Details of understanding on overspend on goods and services. Slide number 19. That's 120. You spoke to it, but it didn't come out very clear. What? Okay. You explained the shifting of funds from the current expense on compensation of employees. It was well explained, but was it really necessary to shift it, because it was there for that purpose? It gives us a problem when the money is being approved for a certain purpose, and it keeps on being shifted and shifted and shifted. That's what gives us some problems. And at the end of the day, it becomes the reconciliation and all these things where we get mixed and don't know that at the end of the day, such a big amount of money has been not been used for what it was approved for. And is it really... can it be qualified as unauthorized expenditure, if that's the case? And if it's unauthorized, shouldn't it go, does it also qualify to be, to follow the formal procedures that it end up in Parliament being approved? Because there was some, the expenditure, the shifting is piece, that at the end you realize that there's such a lot of over expenditure that we as a committee do not know exactly whether we should take it as it is, or whether the agreement between you and the National Treasury should satisfy this committee, because there are a lot of rollovers, a lot of shifting, and at the end of the day there's such a lot of money that has not been used for what it was originally approved for. And we are happy that the vacancy rate has decreased, because we looked at it after the end of June last year, and it really satisfies us, and even at the beginning of the year. And as long as those posts are permanent, I think it will definitely satisfy us. And your strategy was very good to keep your DDGs and top management responsible for filling of vacancies. Thanks very much. I think maybe as he explains, I'll get some clarity on other issues and post questions when necessary.
Thank you, Tichi. I think the last question that Honourable Member Mashiko is raising is that we know that in terms of the PFMA, you are allowed to shift around funds. However, we are of the opinion that there are some departments, sometimes, may not necessarily be transport, but in some instances, we are aware of a situation where departments ask for a specific budget only for funds to be shifted around once they are inside. Now, to us, it says if people are not really telling the truth when they are asking for a particular budget. We're not saying is the case in this situation. I'm just trying to clarify the question that is raised.
I think that PG, you have covered the issues well. We do know that we're dealing with the fourth quarterly report, and the figures that we deal with are those figures that you can refer them to them as interim, because they are just immediately after the end of the year. And as you clean out your books, you get your final, what you call a figure. Sometimes your under or over expenditure may not be as large as it was originally what you call intended for. Maybe for some invoices that were not paid and those kind of things. And I think that as we go to the annual report, those things will become more clearer, because we're dealing with the first quarter report. I'm saying this because we note some changes in terms of what is reported by National Treasury and what you are reporting today. For me, I don't have questions around that, but I do have some questions, for instance, in some of the issues that were raised. Maybe we can get some further clarity, and further, whether it's in future. It is the issue of SANRAL. We're dealing with local governments. The other day they were telling us about roads that were not classified or were in that process. Well, I'm not sure whether it was transport. The other day we're dealing with the FSC. You know, what we were saying in short, which, without going back to the issue, is that we have been discussing over the years about the issue of reclassification of roads. We think that there should be some kind of clear timelines in terms of when is it going to come. I mean, yes, when is it going to end? When are the people going to know which roads belong to whom? But also just reviewing the whole, what you call, the strategy of roads in South Africa. Are they what you call, we know that we're dealing with whether it's provinces or municipalities are not the same, but in many municipalities and in provinces, roads are a big, big problem. And now we lost cases on the because of roads that are full of are not proper roads. Now it's clear that if we don't, I'm not sure whether there are appeals in terms of those accidents that happen on those roads, and if there are no appeals, clearly we're going to have problems going forward, because we're going to be facing, you will have to have a big budget on litigation only. Maybe the portfolio committee understands better in terms of if there's a clear future strategy in terms of addressing our roads, what you call a problem. Secondly, is the issue of a recap. I don't know how far are the discussions between yourselves and the portfolio committee in terms of your 50,000. I see, I hear that when the taxis talk about this 50,000, that this 50,000 was given, I don't know whether it's in 1999. Is it still there? That 50,000, that the value of that 50,000 in 1999 and 2009, 10 years later, is it still the same? I'm not sure what is being done. I would really, that's of interest, would like to hear what is the latest development around this. Thank you. Okay.
Thank you, sir. And when it comes to buses, I would like to know your plans about the railway buses, because those, I think, are also need attention, because we have people who live in far out area where definitely railway buses will once be needed to transport them. And your plans on the school transport. We have a problem in education where we don't know whether the school transport belongs to the Department of Education or to you, because it affects the children's education, where the department says you are in consultation, if it can just be clarified as education unit is a priority, and accessibility of roads generally in rural areas. Thanks very much.
Now, when you come back during the MTPPS, maybe we can get better explanation.
Okay.
Please.
Chairperson, can I share that 5 minutes maybe with Mr. Pretorius, just to take care of one or two of the questions, and then I'll come to the rest very quickly.
Okay, thank you. I'll respond quickly, since we don't have much time. Distinguishing between goods and services, transfer payments, and other economic classifications. Essentially, compensation of employees is the salaries that we pay to staff. Goods and services, one can say, is largely discretionary expenditure where we determine projects and the department spends the money itself on various projects, and it also includes administrative costs like stationery, telephone lines, telephone usage, traveling costs, and so on. Transfer payments are transfers that we make to various organizations, either to provinces, municipalities, or our agencies to fulfill. Yes, and it's specifically voted in the budget as under those classifications. For instance, partially another question, we may, in terms of the PFMA and Treasury regulations, shift funds from compensation of employees to goods and services, but not the other way around. We may not increase compensation of employees without Treasury approval. Shifting of funds from compensation of employees, what was it necessary? The fact is, yes, we were allocated funds by Treasury. We didn't request for additional funds for compensation of employees. We were allocated 46 million additional on the adjusted budget. Those funds were shifted within the ambit of legislation to other priorities. There were quite a number. The department has lots of unfunded mandates, and those funds were shifted. It's not unauthorized expenditure. For instance, whether the figures are interim or not, these are final figures. They were audited, and it will be appearing as such in our annual report. Where, for instance, in one slide, for instance, the last one, where payments were not yet claimed from us because our accounting system works on a cash basis, what we didn't yet pay will not reflect as expenditure. But those claims that we were aware of were indicated as provisions in the financial statements. Thank you.
Chair, if I may also just assist on the compensation of employees, it was because we had the vacancy of 30% and 26% in that financial year that we had the extra 46 million under compensation of employees in order to allocate. That's what resulted in it. It wasn't as if we had planned to, but the money was there because of that 30% and 26%. Yes, but once you get to April, that amount drops, so we'll never have another amount to shift around from compensation of employees because the vacancy rate will not allow us to. And I think that's an important thing. Chair, just the issue around buses for railways. We have the program that is run by BRASA, where from the 1st of April last year, we took over responsibility for Shosholoza Main, which is a long-distance rail services which used to belong to Transnet, it's come over to FASA and therefore is now under our control. We have bought buses for 2010, and I'm sure you know about that. Part of the strategy is to allow us, in order to buy the buses in 2010, use them for that purpose, but after 2010, those buses are intended to go and do exactly that, to go to the areas that social laws are named applies and operate in and provide critical services. We want to do something called demand generation. For instance, to assess whether you can run a long-distance train service between Johannesburg and Polokwane, you need to run buses first and see that succeed, then shift to train. So we'll be doing all of those long-distance programs that basically are about providing critical services in many areas. But in addition as well, when you get to Polokwane, you will then have a feeder system of buses that take you from Polokwane to the outlying areas from the railway station. And that's what those buses, the legacy of those buses is going to come and serve that particular purpose. Lena Transport, we are still in a debate with education.
That's on this one. You know, I'm smiling. I'm just thinking of my colleague, former colleague, Hala. Now, when you're talking about buses and the demand-driven approach, you would speak about the rail transport that was created by Eastern Cape to revive your Umtata to East London. Now, you would normally say the train runs for 24 hours. And the weather, the passengers would still be, if we thought that, I mean, if people there thought that passengers would really go to the train that travels for 24 hours when there's a transport that can take 2 hours between them. Now, that's why I was smiling, but sometimes I think that we really need to ensure that our strategies are really real strategic, you know, interventions. Because sometimes in that kind of a case, I think that whether it was strategic to do that, but we're not there now.
No. Thank you very much for that, Chairperson. Part of the challenge in Kai Rail, which is Umtata, is that it's really meant for freight, though. It's a combined freight and passenger service, which really would like to deal with the timber and all of those aspects of the freight. So it becomes a slow train for passengers. But it's a function of what they were trying to achieve in that region. If I may just quickly, Lena Transport, we're still discussing with the Department of Education. We haven't resolved this issue. We actually require a joint MINMEC between us, which enables us to go and resolve the issue. Education says they will not transfer the funds to follow the function to come back to transport because they don't want to lose the funds. But they agree that it's not their core business, because they are not transportation people. But the policy around how we transport learners is something we must get from them. We can't dictate, because there are all sorts of issues around the geography of schools, how many kilometers people must qualify. They're trying to discourage school children from not going too far to school and keeping within a particular radius and then giving those subsidies in relation to that. But what it's a discussion that still is to be held. But on the other hand, we provide what we think is a short gap measure and a very nice program we do of Shobagalul. For learners that walk for more than 5 kilometers, we provide bicycles. And that at least fills the gap in areas particularly that don't have the formal learner transport of buses. And then the Shobagalul program rolls out on rural areas particularly. And we do Shobagalul and the infrastructure associated with it. So we do bicycle lanes as well, so that the pupils in that area can use their bicycles to go to school. But the qualification criteria is very clear. You must walk for more than 5 kilometers, otherwise you don't get a free bicycle from us. But they're actually free, and they work as a grant. We're operating Shobagalul as a grant system with infrastructure. The issues around Sandral, Honorable Chair, and the relationship to local government, we approved in 2007 the road infrastructure framework and strategy for South Africa, which is called RIFSA in short, which basically is a framework that outlines everything that we're going to do in the road environment, including the issue of classification, proclamations, and all of that. And Chair, I must indicate we're still struggling with that particular program. We're probably going to finalize the reclassification exercise in about 18 months. Part of the challenge is just finding the asset register, of knowing where this road is registered, who has this ownership, because you can't reclassify without the asset register, and that's the process that's preceding that in order for us to really map out those roads and then transfer. The process of transferring, though, is happening, and it's happening in a way with SANRAL currently. Where we go into an area and find largely a provincial or municipal road, that is classified as provincial and municipal, but in its function is regional and national. We do a proclamation that allows for us to assign that road as a national road, and SANRAL takes it over. So that is the mechanism we're using in the interim before we sort out the big program of finally sorting out reclassification across the country. We have R37 in Polokwane. We have the road to Richards Bay in KwaZulu-Natal, and many of them that have already been reclassified as national roads just because of the way they function and what purpose they serve. And that helps. As soon as you classify it national, it goes onto the SANRAL books. It gets the same investment, maintenance, and management arrangements, which then means it's upgraded as a national road and operates as such. Chair, on taxi recap, I'm happy to say in February of this year, Cabinet approved the increase of the quantum of the subsidy, or quantum of the scrapping allowance. It was 50,000 for a very long time. The program did start in 2006, though, so it couldn't have been reviewed prior to 2006, because there was no program before 2006. Between 2006 and this year, we've gotten Cabinet to approve it, effective from 1st of April this year. It is now 54,000. But the principle that has been approved is that it will get adjusted according to inflation every year. So every year you'll see the minister in his budget speech announcing the new amount, just so that everybody knows what that amount is. Chair, I think we've attempted to respond to all the questions. Also around goods and services. Yes, I think, Chair, I'll get into a particular problem area for fruitless and wasteful expenditure for his air ticket to come here if he does not have an opportunity to deal with some of the issues. May I ask Mr. Letswalo to add a few things?
Thanks, Chair. The issue on goods and services is, like Dennis said, I think it's a classification issue. And as a result, I mean, you'd have your consultants are paid under that. So the 120,000 that you are seeing out of that slide would include consultants. Every other thing that you do that is discretionary spending that the department will be spending on will be spent under that classification. And any other, so what we'll do is that any other thing that is not falling under any other economic classifications as prescribed by National Treasury will then fall under goods and services.
Chairperson, may I ask, does it have a limit up to this amount?
No.
This is a goods and
services.
Dealing with the project, but I'm worried about this way, it's discretionary.
The issue is in relation to your function that then translates into program that will translate into project. So your projects will be informed by your program, and in that way you wouldn't spend anything outside the mandate of what the programs are meant to achieve. Thanks.
Well, PG, thank you very much. It's always better to be the first one. You get the lion's share in terms of time. So, Home Affairs, not Home Affairs, Labour. They will not enjoy the same time that you did. But I think that obviously you have your department is a huge department, it's big, with huge responsibility. And I think that there's no time where we can say, TG, we have really what to call it, we understand now, we conclude now the matters. I'm sure even with the portfolio committee, it's the same. We'll be going again to, I'm sure when we go to NCPPS very soon,
we will invite you and get some more clarity on those matters that we gave you 5 minutes to deal with. I know that they are extensive, what you call matters. But thank you very much. And you did indicate to me privately that your constituency kind of delayed you this morning, but at least they sympathize with you because you were able to arrive on time. Thank you very much, DJ. Welcome, Tichy. Now, today you can move anywhere and sit anywhere where you'll be comfortable. Welcome, Tichy. Department of Home Affairs. Now we're dealing with this very important department. I see that in the scheme of things, you have not changed name, you have not been reconfigured, you're remaining yourself, your old Home Affairs. We have gone through the report of National Treasury, your Section 32 report. We have noticed that there are challenges that DG. I know that the minister, when she when she submitted her budget to Parliament this year, she raised the challenges that Home Affairs is confronted with. But I must indicate that from the reports that one has recently read about Home Affairs, it's clear that you are confronting those challenges. We decided to take this fourth quarterly report because it's the last report, and that last report kind of gave us an indication of what is going to come out in your annual report, which is taken care of by the Portfolio Committee. We are aware that we get figures fresh from the oven, if you like. Sometimes there might be changes from those figures that we received. What really worried us was that on capital expenditure, as shown by in the report, you spent about 70%, and there was a 30% underspending. I know that capital expenditure for the departments mean a number of things. But for the lay people like ourselves, it means creation of jobs in that area. And when there's understanding, in the capital, what you call in CAPEX, then we get worried whether the jobs that perhaps the president has committed government to create will be created if other departments are not really up to confronting this challenge clearly. As I said, that we would like to hear from you, perhaps, if this is the state of affairs and what is it that you intend doing to address it. You can introduce yourself, that is Mama, and your colleague. Thank you. And I must congratulate you that at least you the tightening belt. You know, you're not bringing the whole Department of Home Affairs here. Congratulations for that.
Thank you, Chair, and honorable members. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to come and explain, defend our performance in the fourth quarter. I have brought with me the CFO, Desegra Naidu. He is acting. A lot of the people are acting in our department because of the historical problem. I will ask him to deal with some of the technical areas, but I'm grateful that there is some kind of recognition that attempts are being made to resolve these matters. I think as we discuss, it may become clear that the situation is improving from year to year. Last year, we spent 92% of the budget. This year, it's 96% that was spent all round, and even the exceptions, as we'll explain, were due to factors completely outside the control of the department. May I ask Segrin to proceed?
Thank you, Gigi. Thank you, honorable members. By way of background, just to let the members understand the department in terms of the opening statements that were made. From a capital point of view, the Department of Home Affairs is more labor-intensive than capital-intensive. We do have large IT projects that have capital components built in, but capital assets like servers, mainframes, things of that nature, but not the building of properties as such. So from a service delivery point of view, the department is more labor-intensive than capital-intensive. And then we can go on. In terms of just as background, we have submitted our audited financial statements by the 31st of May, and our audit has been completed. But because it has not been tabled yet in terms of the PFMA, we need to table by the 30th of September, we can't disclose in terms of the outcomes thereof. The numbers that you will see from an audit perspective, those are audited numbers, and they won't change. So you can take it that these are audited numbers. All right, from a program structure point of view, by way of background as well, in the department almost 2-3 years ago, the department only had three programs. Initial program on administration. The second program was called Services to Citizens and Immigration. So it was combined. And the third program was transfers to agencies. Within the Department of Home Affairs, there are three agencies for which we are responsible, that being the IEC, although we're not directly responsible as a constitutional body that they are. The other is the Film and Publication Board. And the third agency is the Government Printing Works, which does our security printing, printing of passports, printing of ID enabling documents, things of that nature. As part of the change within Home Affairs, we separated the two core business functions of Home Affairs, hence the program structure changed as well, into Services to Citizens and Immigration Services, which is also the, inspectorate that deals with refugees, asylum seekers, and the like. In terms of our final appropriated budget, the department was given 4.8 billion rand, which included 1.2 billion that went to agencies. The large increase in that amount for agencies was primarily due to the national election that took place in April. So a lot of the money came into the department's vote. In terms of spending, we spent 4.6 billion of that. That brings us to 96.9% of our budget spent. The two areas of underspending, and it's not necessarily savings, it is underspending, are project related. There are two projects, one within the civic services environment, the other within the immigration services environment. The one being the smart card ID, and the other being the APP project, the APP being the Advanced Passenger Processing contract that we entered into in February. And those are the figures there, the 114. And the second one is Advanced APP, Advanced Passenger Processing contract that we entered into.
Can we say a little more?
Yeah. Particularly because of 2010, we will need to make sure that the people who come into the country are checked even before they board the aircraft from their countries of departure. There is a project that was authorized for us to place people in Heathrow or in whichever places are chosen, so that before somebody even boards the aircraft, you know that they are okay or you don't want them there. Thanks.
In case the smart card ID, the recommendation was not made via the procurement agency, which is CETA, hence there was no contract, hence we could not spend money. In terms of the last quarter spend...
Can we state this more explicitly? All government departments procure their IT requirements through CETA, the state IT agency. So the tendering is managed by them. In this particular case, the tender for the provision of the smart card, smart ID card, was managed at CETA, and they never reached conclusion. What normally happens is that when they've finished the whole process, they call all the bidders together, evaluate them for different aspects, technical, BE, price, etc. When they have finished that, they then make a recommendation to the Director General of a department. In this case, it would be the Director General of Home Affairs, and say, we recommend company so-and-so to be given the tender. We never got to that stage. They did not finish that process. That evaluation process was dragged by problems. I think there were leakages of information about which company has won, and then they would go back and do an audit, etc. To this day, that tender has still not been awarded. We had planned to start piloting the smart card in December last year. The tender had gone into CETA around May, and they suddenly should have finished the tendering process by then. But because they hadn't finished that, and still haven't today, we were not able to spend the funds. We then requested National Treasury to allow us to carry this over to the current year, and they agreed.
If you had the tender by May, you are going to pilot it in December.
Yes, Honourable Member, we would certainly have. We started piloting the card by December last year.
If I may ask as well, TG, by the way, CETA falls under
the Department of Public Service
yes,
and Administration.
Yes.
Mm.
Minister, Honorable Baloyi, now.
And in cases, do you sign service level agreements between, and if people don't perform, what happens? I assume that you're saying you gave to them in May 2008. In August 2009, they have not performed. So what do we do? What happens then?
In terms of legislation, any procurement by any department has to be done through CETA. There is a service level agreement that is signed. There is a business agreement that is signed which sets these things out. But somehow we're in a bind here. I think the options that exist and which the minister is considering right now is to cancel the tender and perhaps go to... we have media here and so on. I don't want to talk about it. And take other options. Yes, yes, yes. I think there are options that we are looking at now. Yes, yes. But otherwise, it's not easy. The legislation says we must procure through them.
We understand legislation. You know, we're dealing with other departments which in their capex deals with issues of construction in most cases, which are dealt with by public works. And where in some cases, especially at the provincial level, you find that capacity does not there's not sufficient capacity to deal with what kind of those things. Now, they have also had to look for other options in order to fulfill also the functions of the client department, if you like. Because now, I know CETA, and I think that we might, with the portfolio committee, relevant portfolio committee, have to invite them. They have not performed on a number of cases. We have been to certain departments which require their services. And they have not performed, or they have not performed. I think that I'm not sure what the portfolio committee is doing in relation to that, because to us, it's an indication that there's no capacity. And now it's a kind of holding government or other departments to ransom, because you must go through this process. I think that, a year is sufficient to have given them. Something needs to be done. I don't think that we can really say every day, well, we have given to the department, because there are implications if these things are not done timely. Now, what do you do? And that's what is that up to now, did you consider? I thought that you would say to us, they are clear what you call the program. I don't want you to diverge, maybe security, what you call information that you might not, what you call it now, it might not be right, but just in terms of broad, what you call a principle, that, to us, it's clear that there are problems, because the budget is your budget. It's not the budget of CETA. It is your budget. And now, if sometimes there's no performance, I think that you take the flag, not CETA. CETA doesn't take. You will go to CETA and say, look, you're making things difficult for us. But I think really something needs to be done, because we cannot continue for a service that we have identified as a necessary service, but take the year to conclude that service. You know, many people think that working for government is a good thing, because sometimes, as long as we have registered as an employee of government, some people go and sleep. At the end of the month, they will get a salary. Salary will come. I mean, this kind of a service. And I think that we will have to recommend to the committee that let's invite SITA. That's general. It's not only this issue. There are a number of cases that I have in other, what they call a capacity, dealt with, where SITA has not performed. In fact, it's clear that we need to talk to SITA. I'm not saying that you must hold back in terms of the step that you want to take to address your situation. You can continue with it. But the fact of the matter is that they have not performed in this case. They have not performed in other instances that we will mention to them where they have not performed. So we can't just keep quiet and say, no, it's fine. We'll wait for them the day they address if it's capacity problem. Because government, the way government works is that you do not wake up one day in May 2008 and say, look, SITA, would like to request you to take, I mean, to do this function for us. It is planned over time. Everyone becomes aware. We now dealing our nature of type of budget, your MTF. It makes everyone aware that next year, these are the things that we have in mind. We're going to do ending the budget. By the time the budget is passed, everyone is clear. And I suppose that by that time, the relevant department, in this case yourself, you have approached people on certain items that you would like to embark on. You are aware that in the outer year of 2011, 2012, there are plans of things that you would want to do. So budget does not come as a surprise. So it's difficult for us to accept that when people do not perform.
No,
I mean, for a year is too much.
Thanks, Chair. What actually has constrained us a little bit, but we must get out of this constraint, is the tender process was audited by the AG's office. And at a certain, when this leakage office supposedly, yes, of information happened. The board, I think, at SITA intervened to say, let's stop the process and check again. Now, we were informed that not only was the AG auditing the process, on the basis of which you would say the process is good, so let's award if you recommend. I think the board at SITA ordered a forensic audit to take place. I was then advised that there was a forensic audit taking place. Please wait. My concern at the time was, what happens if the forensic audit authenticates the process and we have already decided on an option? But, Chair, I'm in total disagreement. We are actively looking at certain options because we never got the result of that forensic audit. My concern, our concern was, if the forensic audit were to say that the process was clean and we have decided on an option, people would come on us and say, if there was a winner there, they would say, why are you taking bread from us when in fact the process has been found to be that? But there's been no conclusion and we are definitely embarking on another option now.
Now I understand, teacher. What you're saying is that the issues are not just simple and straightforward, as you call it. They are complicated matters. Maybe we should leave it there, but I hope that, I don't know how long is it going to take, but I hope that PG, that process now is almost coming to conclusion. That of forensic was audit being done, because I think that's where these delays are. No, it's fine. I hope that then when we meet next time, you will be able to say to us, look, now, this is where the process is, so that we should not really wait forever. Because, the processes that they are doing, they are right. But our concern as a committee is that you have identified a necessary service. Now, that is delayed over time, and clearly, I think that, those people who are conducting that forensic audit, I'm not sure when it was started, when it's supposed to come to an end. Because it must come to an end, and I think that if necessary, pressure needs to be put on those people that are charged with that responsibility. I think that this was the main issue, if I'm correct, and. But we seem not to be very sure, DJ, in terms of, I'm not sure if you have been informed in terms of when is this forensic audit going to come, because I hear that you sometimes your hands are somehow tied as well if that process is on, and I agree with you that if it vindicates the process, then you might find yourself in another, what you call it, litigation as well if you continue ignoring this.
Chair, we definitely will take the risk regardless. It's gone on for too long, and we are embarking on the other option. We will report a different story next time.
There was actually still on the smart card issue, and we're going to the advanced passage. Yeah, there were still outlining some issues when we needed clarity on that.
If we turn to page or slide 5, in terms of the APP, advanced passenger processing. This is a company we're dealing with. It's also called CITA, S-I-T-A, but it is a foreign company, the shareholders of which are the airlines, international airlines. Even SAA is a shareholder in this company. And what this project seeks to do is to get data in terms of movement control when passengers fly into the country from a foreign destination. We get the data electronically. The contract was concluded in February, and the initial part of this contract that we entered into has got two parts to it. One is a custom design for the local environment, because these guys have not done a contract in South Africa for on a national basis. They work with SAA and AXA, but not on a national basis as we've got. And the second part of it is to actually do the infrastructure for the data that we need. And in terms of that contract, we concluded it in February 2009. Hence, we couldn't spend the money because the custom design, which was one portion of it, was only completed in April 2009. Thus far, we have paid about 30 million rand off that already because the custom design has been signed off. The balance of it is still to be signed, and that will only happen in around October-November timeframe for this year. Both these amounts have been requested for rollover to National Treasury, and they have acceded to that. So they've granted approval for those rollovers. In the first instance, which is the smart card ID rollover, because of the discussions we had just had, and Treasury said, because we don't have a direction from CETA or a contract in place, they advised us to roll over that money for the Who Am I Online project. So they've allowed us to roll over that money to the extent of 110 million for the Who Am I Online project. and the balance being the difference between the 110 and the 114, they increased the immigration services account, the APP contract rather, from the 35 to the 39 million. So this amount of money has been rolled over. If we had spent all of this money, we would have spent 100% of our budget in the current financial year. Okay. In terms of, maybe I can just go back.
I tend to oversimplify because I don't know much about these IT things. Yes, not certain that the CETA situation would be resolved. National Treasury advised that it's okay, we understand your case, roll it over, but let's finance a project which has also been approved now, but which still can do with more funds. It continues to be funded by Treasury. This is the so-called Who Am I Online, which is a project that seeks to change the way in which we do business. It's really aimed at reducing paper as much as possible. So that's the one that they allocated the funds to this year. But we will be able to use funds to pilot this, hopefully before the end of this financial year, in terms of the agreement we have with them. Thank you.
The expenditure trend for the last quarter. In terms of that, as you can see, the department did, for the last quarter's budget, did overspend its budget, but that was because it was underspending in previous quarters. Historically, year on year, our figure, we spent 14% more than we should have in the last quarter. Last year, we had spent 120% over. For the last quarter, so that 114% was 120% in the previous year. So we are making progress in terms of minimizing the spend in the last quarter, because traditionally within departments, there's a March spike, what they call a March spike. And in Home Affairs, that spike is still there, but we're reducing it as we bring in disciplines into the organization, the largest of which is sitting in the administration function. What we found in the department that we're changing, and it takes time to change it because you have to do it in conjunction with National Treasury, is our IT projects, which are very large, sit within Program 1. Now, traditionally within Program 1, the spending should be curbed to overheads and salary and wages. But in Home Affairs, our IT projects were parked in that program. And as we wean out the IT project and put them under the business owners, being services with citizens or immigration services, then our immigration budget will decrease. That's why there was a lot of spend going through last year. It doesn't mean that we suddenly brought on a whole bunch of new personnel into the organization. So I just want to clear that out, because traditionally the administration normally goes for overhead costs such as the DG's office, my office, procurement's office, and overhead which doesn't enable service delivery is sitting in Program 1.
May I just add that from a budgeting point of view, it always looks bad to have so much money in administration. In fact, the bulk of that is the capital expenditure that goes into IT. One hopes that we can actually create another program which looks at IT issues, then there would be a proper reflection on how much we use on staff and overhead.
All right, the next slide.
Maybe you really need to look at that, because when you look at the budget, people would say, well, what are the core functions of this department? Now, if you look at the budget, there's an expenditure of 620 million, the 300 in the what is supposed to be the core function, then people say no. So there's a problem here. Now, but as I'm trying to say, I agree with that suggestion, because it's clear that you need a lot of technology there IT. You need a lot of IT from time to time.
If I can go back to slide 2 very quickly, if you look at it from a few years perspective, you can see administration program 1 is about a third of the focus is still missing, or is missing the larger portion of the budget should be taken to a program. Well, in terms of the extent in the provinces, which is for the whole year, although we as a national department do not have a provincial form of their department, we are present in the provinces. We have regional offices and district offices in those provinces as well. And in terms of the spending allocation, from the our largest market against the largest budget, even not by geographical spread, but in terms of population, we spread our budget in that way. The main reason for the overspending is a lot of the provinces were ramping up towards the election, which we allowed, because there was in terms of shifting, we could have shifted or have shifted things to allow for overspending. But on a holistic basis, we could manage within our budget. On a structural level, yes. If the savings is in a different area, we can shift that money to overspend for certain things that we can see. We will allow to do that. In terms of the two closed processes, the one process is the normal checking in front, the other process is that we are going to work for our time. All right, and this is the view on our agency in terms of the spending and allocation that was specifically to each of the entities that I mentioned in terms of this, our responsibility to each of the entities, the IEC is a constitutional entity, so we don't really have a direct involvement with them. Suffice to say that a portion of their vote allocation is transferred via home affairs. In terms of government principles, they have a separate CEO, a separate audit committee, a separate set of financials. They are accountable to us in relation to the process that we make over to them to make sure that the internal control processes are working. Same with STD, they have got their own board of directors and an executive that runs that organization. And we will come in the current environment that we might have to be responsible for. All of the transfers that we do make is done in agreement with national safety. As an example, in the last financial year, the IEC has requested all of its transfers to be done in around December, November timeframe. And we approached the Treasury. Treasury then advised us, well, this is the reason why the IEC wanted this, but then advised that they would not be in a position to do that because if they had to transfer the money or the voter funds in December timeframe, then they had to go and borrow in the open market. So by and large, we're also restricted by the cash flow within the national
sure. The 100% expenditure here is from our perspective. How they'll spend that money, they'll account for independently to yourself. They might not have spent it as at 100% level. This is really in respect of our own books.
PC, you came in at the right place because already in my copy I've got questions there. Well, it was explained that IC, well, it's a constitutional, what you call it, a body, section 9, or chapter 9 institution. Now, the other two, it's not only with, we are worried as a committee on appropriation, this committee on appropriation in terms of accountability that you transfer those monies and you walk away. Then they come next year and ask for more, you transfer. We don't know if we think that we need to find ways of allowing those people to account. You know, with some of the agencies that direct transfers from Parliament straight to them, and then you can make those people account. But
these government printing works, and you don't know how those monies are spent. And we would really like to find ways of ensuring that there is some kind of accountability. Because, I mean, the departments, they account you are here. But with them, you transfer the funds. Then at the end of it, I don't know if you have a way of making them understand what is going on there. Yes, and if not, I think we would like, as Parliament, to know what is going on there. How do we make them what we call account somehow, or we receive annual report? I don't know how you make them account. How do you know what's going there? Understand the fact that there's some kind of autonomy that those bodies have. But the fact of the matter is that they are using the taxpayers' money. They need to account one way or another. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. In terms of, let me start with the government printing works first. Traditionally within Home Affairs, the only transfer we used to do over to the GPW is for bank charges. It was limited to about 200,000. That was it. In the recent past, when GPW approached, because they are our printing arm, approached Treasury via our encouragement as well to procure new passport systems, Treasury allowed for that to happen via the books of Home Affairs. So the transfers you see here, except for the trivial amount of bank charges, went for the procurement and settlement of the passport machines that they bought from Japan. So that's where that money went. And it was only for that, nothing else. This transfer to GPW is not for their full budget. It was specific to procure that equipment. And that was it. GPW, in its right, from a National Treasury perspective and from a Department of Home Affairs perspective, is an entity that trades on its own strength. So they generate revenue, and they also pay for expenses out of the revenue that they generated. So to that extent, they're self-sustaining. If it were not for this, because Treasury had granted a recapitalization of GPW, and one of the issues was to procure the new passport. Machine. From a film and publication point of view, from an accountability point of view, the CEO of GPW sits on our exco. They do send their monthly reports to the department. On a monthly basis, they get tabled at exco, which is our executive committee meeting, which gets discussed at that meeting, and it's forwarded to Treasury. So in terms of the rulings where by the 15th of the month you have to submit to National Treasury your monthly reports, GPW does that. So there is an accountability internal control mechanism from that point of view, and we have insight into that.
So you're saying this allocation was a once-off allocation. Next is not going to continue next year.
There is a allocation in this year, but also for the passport machine, because the Treasury could not fund the full machine in one allocation. So going into the future, we may not find that. We will not find that, actually.
But it's just a once-off.
Yeah, it's a once-off, but over 2 years, to put it that way.
Can I add also that they account to the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs independently, and they are audited independently. We could get a bad audit and they get a good audit, but they are fully accountable to the Portfolio Committee.
Yes, sir.
In terms of the Film and Publication Board, or FPB, in the same vein, the $33.5 million is not a full allocation budget to them. It's a partial, it's augmenting their budget. They also trade, in terms of the PFMA, they are scheduled as a 3A entity, which one of the rulings within a 3A entity scheduling is that any surplus of profits you make, you cannot keep. You have to return it back to the Treasury. They are listed as a 3A entity, so they have to return that fund. So unspent money is here, by definition, goes back into Treasury. They also report to Home Affairs, but also to National Treasury. And National Treasury in terms of, well, they're a separate entity as such, but they report to National Treasury independently. The only reason they are housed under Home Affairs, and this is a discussion we're having within the department as well, are they suitably housed under Home Affairs mandate, is that should they require additional funds from the fiscus, then it comes via our vote, the department's vote. But the same control mechanism that we've put in place to GPW, we've put similar controls in terms of FPB. Their CEO is not part of the Exco, and the reason for that is GPW has not been scheduled in terms of the PFMA. FPB has been. It's similar. FPB is similar to CETA, the CETA we spoke about, in that they're scheduled in the same manner. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. We know the main function of the department is a service to citizens, and we are aware that there are some problems in the department, in as far as because the lives of our people depends in this department. This is where the IDs come from, where they which facilitates the obtainment of their grants of work or whatever. And we want to know how tight is this department now, because we are aware of the many issues, let me say, as it's called, corrupt activities taking place, where IDs are given to wrong people, where our very own children can't access the necessary grants of any social service because their IDs are in wrong names. Some people are married to wrong people. What is in place, whether it be temporarily, because we see you are a new department, what is in place so far to make sure that there's a better life for all South Africans and South Africans, and not miss out on what they genuinely qualify for and need to meet their basic services? And once again, how is your vacancy rate? Because we have a very, very big job ahead of you for 2010. And again, are you in consultation with SARS? Because SARS has something to do with customs. So is it on the same level with immigration, or is it a different issue altogether from what you're doing? Thanks very much.
Thank you, Congress. Now, I think the PG says now, what is this other arm, your agency? Yeah. Now, the one that PG says now, they get a good audit report and not Home Affairs. Now the other day, PG, you know, I was watching some of your people there with their faces covered, you know. Well, I thought that now it means that you're really on top of the issues now. People know that very soon, I think they will know that crime doesn't pay. But if we may turn to slide number 4, on that 620, there is this 266 million. And 222 overspending there, 226 million overspending. How was it catered for? Well, because in your under expenditure, it does not seem to reflect in your final, what you call it, under expenditure. How did you cater for it? That's one. But
You know, the statement that you put with respect to slide number 6, where you say now you allow your provinces to overspend. I'm not sure if you understood that statement when you made it, you know, because we are guided by the Public Finance Management Act. We do understand that at the end of the day, if you budgeted for $1 billion, you'll spend either less than that, there might be a few rands or so under or over. And I don't think that we should give an attitude that says, well, go for it. If you overspend, you overspend. I mean, you're telling the committee that. I don't think that we should, what you call it, should not be in that spirit, you know. For instance, if you look at Eastern Cape, Free State, Eastern Cape, Western Cape, Gauteng, I think that there is an allowance of about 5% or so. But if you give them, you encourage them that now, spend as much as you like. When the PFMA says you don't spend what you don't have, I think that that statement is a worrying statement. It was not conveyed. The intention was conveyed. It didn't convey the intention of what you wanted to say. Otichi.
The intention is not to let the managers run free rein in terms of budgeting. And in context here, the over expenditure is within the department. It's not at a higher level. As an example, the budget for the department is $4.8 billion, and the over-expenditure was not above that amount. But for us to allow a budgeted amount for a province and then to exceed it by a percent or 2% as an example, and the highest I think we've gone is 9%, is that was a saving in another department. For example, a saving in KwaZulu-Natal would have been transferred to an overspending in another environment. So those requests come very specifically to say, look, we don't have budget for this, but there is savings in another area. And those exceptions are granted by means of shifting of funds. So when you look at it, and this is it's three levels lower, because on a program level, those are the four programs. As you go three levels lower, then as we manage our finances, we manage it at this level on a provincial basis. Then we look at the need, why we need to overspend. If you don't have it, where is the saving within other provinces or other areas of the department as well? Hence, you see that the final appropriation here is only R1 billion, not the R4 billion for the whole department as such. So in terms of the overexpending, it's not by any stretch of the imagination that we let the people run loose and just spend as they want. It is a guarded spending, but sometimes to deliver services, we need to spend more than our budget, provided there's savings elsewhere we can transfer. If there isn't, then this would be zero. There would be no difference between the budget and the actual. But if there are savings, instead of taking the hard line and saying, no, your budget said 100, therefore you spend 100, and giving that savings back to Treasury, we allowed, especially in line of the election that was coming up, we allowed certain over expenditure to be approved.
I add again, may I add, because I'm neither an economist nor an IT nor a finance person, I think we have a helicopter view as we sit at head office and we look at the performance of each province, and the over expenditures are authorized, pre-authorized, only understanding that there was an under expenditure elsewhere, which I would hope that in many instances it's justified, but rather than then let funds go unutilized and then we appear here for unutilized expenditure funds, that's the case. But it's an over expenditure that's authorized with certain limits. If people had their way, I mean, we never have enough money, Chair, to spend. So if somebody has actually managed their budget, their program very well, and say, can I have more, we look and see whether, in fact, there is the more that they can use because there has been an under expenditure elsewhere. I think that's the sense. We don't discover that they have overspent. It's pre-authorized. I don't know how much it helps, but with good budget management, I guess these things still shouldn't happen. There should be no under expenditure, and there should be no over expenditure. But if we had more money, we would spend even more. There is just such a need for funds.
It's fine. Let's continue. But I think that I don't know. Maybe Mr. Naidu is an accountant. We're not. But they talk about your credit side and your debit side. So it means that you must balance both. And if you don't do both, then you create problems. That's correct. But it's fine.
That's why I mentioned this slide, because this slide shows holistically we didn't overspend our budget. We had an understanding of those two projects, which is part of the idea of the BPG.
Like I said earlier, Chair, this is a view only on the last quarter. So in the previous quarters, there was actually 226 underspending. That brings us back to cancel out the overspending in terms of that. So that's what's happening here. If we had a quarter-by-quarter view, you would see holistically it will still add up to the slide number 3, which is the view of the whole year. Okay. Thank you.
There was a set of questions that are not financial and therefore more difficult around the issues of corrupt activities. Sometimes you wonder whether when you see those covered people and the numbers that we release to the public of people that we have apprehended, whether this is represents success or the lead is just opening a lead to something that's a lot more. We do have problems of corrupt activities in the department. It's unfortunate, Chair, and this is not anything to console us, that we are a microcosm of our country. There's just so much corruption in the nation, and we're not an exception. But we have to manage what's within us. The corruption, I mention this because it always involves third parties in many instances, syndicates, in some others, just impatient people frustrated by us, and then they are willing to pay monies and so on. The effort that we are making, I think with some success, is to block the holes in the corruption chain. There are so many areas which we need to be careful about. Some of it just good administration. How many books came in and how many left? If we are careless about that and we cannot account for that difference, we open ourselves up for corruption. A question of how many people have access to the production of a birth certificate or of an ID, so that if there is a funny one, you know that there is only one person responsible for that. That's another area that we've been looking at. And there are really very, very many others. Orphans who have no parents, they are looking for grants. And social workers come in and we punch a number that represents a parent, and our people abuse that and they start punching a lot of numbers. So you have many, many orphans which really don't exist, but in the budget of the Quran. So we've been identifying the many areas where in the chain of corruption and looking at how we can plug that. We've succeeded in some cases. We are by no means at the end of that. Where we do catch people, of course, and that's really at the very end, is where you see these people covering themselves, and we cooperate with the police. They've been good. All of us are corrupt, unfortunately. Some we transfer to the police or the prosecutors, and they release them. They offer people bail who should not be in this country, and you say, why are you giving them bail? Where do you expect them to be? And you have no explanation. We're dealing with a really, really serious matter here. But for what we are responsible, we're trying to introduce good administrative procedures. We're also trying to introduce proper use of technology so that there's only one person. Password is applicable to one person and not to five, because there are not enough computers, so people come around. It's a whole series of things that we are attempting to do in order to do this, to curb corruption. The marriages to false people, some of them are... I think we've, in the past, I don't know if we still have, I shouldn't crow too much, but I think the numbers, as we discover the areas of vulnerability, we plug those. We just need to be ahead of the game, because the people are doing this. But it's a vexing problem. We are a country that is desired destination by many people, not only from the region, but from other countries. People from China, from Pakistan, from many, try to acquire documents so that they put access to our system. I think we will win this one. It's going to take a bit of time, so on, but it's a tough one. The vacancy rate. Honorable member asked about vacancies. The rate is high, lamentably high. Unfortunately, because we had to do a very fundamental change to the organization as a result of what's been said to be a restructuring of the department, we could not fill certain vacancies. We actually migrated a whole range of people from an old structure to the new one. In arrangements with the unions and others, we had to wait until... See, the restructuring at Home Affairs was not meant to, or did not result in some people losing their jobs. Unions make sure that people... restructuring is not meant to weed out people. The minister, new minister, has come in, and she said in Parliament that she would really like to make sure that she doesn't rush into filling positions with wrong people, but she would rather be slow and err on the side of vacancies, but get good quality people. It's a difficult balancing act, because indeed, when you leave here and go to Weinberg, and people are stranded there, there may be 60% of the staff who need to be there. And it creates a lot of stresses to them. It's unfair and so on. But yes, we're cognizant of that. I think the minister has taken a position that she should take the flak, but she should rather be slow on it and get good quality people. We do collaborate with SARS at the border. They look after the customs side of things, and we... immigration. There is actually an agency called BCOCC, Border Coordinating. Sorry, please help us. We use acronyms so much. BCOCC is?
Border Control Operations
Coordinator. But it's a group of all the agencies that are on the border, which would be Home Affairs, SARS, I think the police, health, etc., whoever is there, so that the activities get some coordination. It's far from perfect. We should coordinate even better than we're doing now. Thank you, sir. Chair, I hope I've answered most of this.
No, thank you very much, DG. This is not the last time we invite you. We're looking forward to inviting you next time. But do you have just in 60 seconds? Have you got anything else to say? We think that we have covered your the report. We're winding up now on your side.
We thank you very much. We hope when next we come, it will not be to answer questions about around our failures.
It's not necessarily around the failures. Maybe it's around the challenges that confront us. But we would like to thank you very much. And I think that on a serious note, a few years ago, you know, this department was known maybe as a notorious department, if you like. And I think that now, in terms of the audit report, I'm sure you're moving towards unqualified. Maybe you might be qualified this year, but I think you're moving towards that. And then we would like to support you with the strategies that you're taking in order to turn around that department. Like my colleague indicated, that as the minister was saying in her budget speech, that this department is about manages our whole life. Now it does, in a literal, very literal way. You're born, you die, get married, you do what, you travel. It's always there. So it's important that it must succeed. So thank you very much. The DG of Labour was here. Sorry? Yeah. What? The DG of Labour was here, and he informed us that there was also another parallel process that is running by the Portfolio Committee. So we agreed that CFO would handle the issues inside. But CFO, our desire is that when we invite you, at least if we could in future get your presentation upfront, so that we can kind of spy in what you're going to tell us. We should be able to do that. You can see that we have to deal with a number of departments. It would be better for us to have information before time, so that we can also minimize, you know, the time of sitting here. But it's fine. You will introduce your team. Thank you.
you think that night that you know the two of us? Is that in the night? Or maybe we should then start by, we don't have lunch, stand on the session. So we tightening ourselves. Maybe we should take our lunch set and then we will start the Rapa.
I'm sorry.